You're listening to highlights from the One Planet podcast interview with Bertrand Piccard, notable environmentalist and aviator. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
It's absolutely true that my previous adventures were more symbolic, because it's true that Solar Impulse, with this huge wingspan, very lightweight, quite difficult to maneuver, was a symbol, not really something operational to transport passengers. But the goal now is not just to revolutionize energy, like with Solar Impulse. The goal is to revolutionize aviation and to show that we can decarbonize aviation. We can make it more efficient. Of course, it's not yet a jumbo jet with hydrogen. It's a two-seater airplane, but I want to make the ultimate flight to shake a little bit the certitudes of the people. If we go around the world nonstop with two people on board, this project can become like a flagship of climate action. The cabin will be unpressurized. We'll fly at 10,000 feet, roughly on the track of the northern tropic. So above a lot of land, cities, schools, universities, governments, where we can speak about restoring hope, bringing solutions. Because I'm so fed up of all the people who believe there is no future. It's too late to do something. It's useless to try. No, today we have to speak of solutions, not only problems. Each time innovators and pioneers are setting ambitious goals, you have a lot of skepticism. You have all the people who think, it's not possible. It has never been done like this. We can prove that it doesn't work. And let's look what happened in history. You know, in the beginning of aviation, there were scientists who were saying you cannot fly if you are heavier than air, because they had not understood the new paradigm of creating lift with speed on the surface. And we have to continue this disruption of aviation and showing always what we can do with innovation, with the genius of human mind and creativity. And Climate Impulse is one more step that will show that we can go further what people consider is impossible. So the main quality you need for something like that is to avoid being afraid of failing. You need to say, okay, it might not be at the first time a success, but you need to try. And if it doesn't work, you try in another way. You change your paradigms, you change your strategy, you change the technology. And each time you improve better in order to succeed at the last attempt. So the goal is to switch from this dirty production of hydrogen into a clean production of hydrogen for the industry and, of course, for heavy mobility. Today, this hydrogen is produced by fractioning methane, fractioning natural gas. So you keep the hydrogen and you release the CO2 in the atmosphere, which is really not good. And to the people who say that they want to ban aviation because it's polluting, I want to say, let's make it clean. And this message of hope, I want to deliver it during this flight that will be around 9 days in the sky, but 4 years of preparation before we take off. And you produce it by using clean, renewable energy, electricity, that goes through water to electrolyze the water. And it dissociates the water into a hydrogen and oxygen. You keep the hydrogen and you compress it, you liquefy it, and you put it in a fuel tank that is very, very well insulated. So it will remain in liquid state several days. But a little bit of it is evaporating. This is what you call the boil-off. And this boil-off is captured, goes through a fuel cell, and with the oxygen from the air, it reconstitutes water and electricity and gives back the electricity to the electric motor. So you fly electric with the energy stored in hydrogen, which means that you have absolutely no noise, you have absolutely no carbon emissions, and you have absolutely no pollution. You just produce water that the pilot can drink during the flight. Hydrogen is not as dangerous as you think, because of course it can burn, but because it is lighter than air, if it starts to burn, it goes up immediately in the air. If you have kerosene or gasoline, when it burns, it's heavier than air and it falls on the ground. And I know there are already some people thinking of it, the non-specialized people say, you are crazy, it will never work. But why? Why should we be negative like this? I think we have to encourage all these pioneers and be very careful, because if we are skeptical for new projects, once these new projects have succeeded, then the skeptical people will look really stupid, you know? So we have to be very, very careful before saying that something is impossible, because there are not so many things impossible. If you really change the paradigms, go into innovation, leave behind all your old beliefs and be open for the unknown. That's basically what I love in adventure, in exploration, in innovation. So really, let's focus on the quality that the human being needs to promote a better quality of life. And also remember that we cannot have all the most modern and funny and fancy things in parts of the world and leave the other part of the world dying of hunger and thirst and living in miserable conditions. It's not only about protecting the environment. It's also about giving to people a decent quality of life, because this extreme poverty is not only morally unacceptable, it's also very dangerous. So what I want really to do is to inspire this change by showing a world that is more efficient, more modern, better quality of life, more profitable results also for the economy and for the industry, because they can go into new business opportunities to sell efficiency, to modernize, to replace what is polluting by what is protecting the environment, to invest into all these new solutions, new companies that will grow, creating jobs and making the world clean and efficient without needing this sacrifice that frightens everybody. So we should really use the rules of psychotherapy into our world. It's a way to make ecology and climate action attractive, exciting, profitable, federating people together. Because today, we have to admit that it's not really very exciting to hear the common language about climate action and ecology. It's about very sacrificial behavior, degrowing the economy, renouncing comfort and mobility, something very expensive. Well, who wants to do that? And it's very strange that the people who want to protect the environment are not able to make their cause much more appealing. And this is what I try to do with the new narrative of the Solar Impulse Foundation, to show the opportunities more than the risk, to show the solutions more than the problems, to show that there are a lot of new professions that will appear, that it is not something expensive, it's a profitable investment. And maybe to summarize this change of paradigm, we're speaking of modernization more than decarbonization. Because if you tell countries they have to decarbonize, they're afraid that it will be detrimental for their economic development. But if you tell them you have to modernize, and if you modernize, you will have new infrastructures, new sources of energy, you will be more efficient, so you can reach a better result by consuming less, which is, of course, much cheaper if you consume less energy, less natural resources. You have a bigger profit margin. And what they cannot do at the individual level, the governments have to do it, because there are so many people who don't evolve if they are not obliged to do it. So this is really appealing for the economy, for finance, for the industry, for the political world who wants to create new jobs. It is so appealing that they will embrace ecology if you present it like this. And then decarbonization will become the logical consequence of the modernization. In a lot of regions of the world, ecology starts to be hostage of political parties. You have the left wing who takes ecology as their flagship. You have the right wing who is fighting against ecology because they want to fight against the left wing and destroy ecology. And at the end, we're not moving fast enough in the protection of the environment and in climate action. But with all the arguments that can touch positively every party, of course it protects the environment, which is good for the ecology. But it's also good for the poorest people who have not enough money to pay for high energy bills. So if you modernize all the energy system, they will pay less energy bill. So it's good also for the socialists, for the left wing. Now you create new jobs. You have new companies being created. It's good for the economy. It's good for the center right. And then what is the far right asking? They're asking for energy independence, energy sovereignty. And if you are more efficient, if you import less energy from the outside, if you create more renewable energies inside the country, you are much more energy independent. So you see that you can find an intersection that benefits to all the political parties. And this is what we have published, because we don't know who's going to win the next European elections or the next American election. But whoever wins, left or right, ecology, far right, center right, socialist, whoever, they have to find a common advantage in modernizing the infrastructures, modernizing the country, becoming more efficient and more profitable for everybody, especially for a better quality of life.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.